webcasting to the world.
Do you remember the moment you saw yourself in God and God in you, and you were one with the universe and God and everybody?
Knowing the truth about the gospel.
You were one with the prostitutes and pimps and priests and kings, and there was nobody on earth that was better than you nor less than you.
That we are all righteous.
And no one on earth was any less in Christ than anyone else.
That's Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution podcast for the 16th of October 2014, coming to you from the slightly tarnished GR Studios right here in Nashville, Tennessee, where with John W. Draper we say, how can the church be received as a trustworthy guide in the invisible when it falls into so many errors in the visible? And here from Houston, Texas, once again grinning and... and picking is the founder and president of the Gospel Revolution, Mr. Michael Williams. G'day, Mike.
G'day, Barris. And where did you find John W. Draper?
I have no idea who he is. I found him on a page that was, let me find the page again. It is called Funny and Serious Religion or Religious Quotes. So
I was just wondering where John W. came from. I mean, one week we quote Abraham Lincoln, and then we quote John W. Draper. So shows you that we are non-discriminating.
Oh, we're equal opportunity quoters here, yes.
The known and the unknown get quoted here.
Hey, you've been away from home, buddy.
I was in Tennessee with my brother and my four sisters. It was a wonderful trip. My goodness, those that saw on Facebook, you get a good picture of my beautiful sisters and my handsome brother. Goodness, what a great bunch. And as we're getting older, we're getting much closer and cherish our time together even more and more. And it was good. Oh, my. It was a short period of time, and I went up for 4 days and got back here last evening, and here we are.
Well, mate, that looks like a nice family.
It is a nice family. They're good, good, good people.
Gospel Revolution.
Now, Mike, we are in the second week of our pledge drive. How is our pledge drive coming, mate?
We are clicking right along. We appreciate what everyone is doing. This has been a slow calling season for Jeff, but believe me, he's not giving up, so you might as well answer your phone.
If you don't answer your phone, we'll find other ways of getting to you.
Exactly. No, it is going well. Now, our monthlies, I think we're still, as of recording time, I think we were still under $200 a month for contributions on monthlies, which we need to have 1,400, so that's down to about 1,200 that we need now to recover the losses earlier this year from some of our folks that just had no choice but to discontinue, at least temporarily, their contributions. But we're doing well. We appreciate what everybody's doing, and I'm sure that Jeff has our list of contributors ready to roll. From last week to this week.
All right. Well, thanks, Mike. We are making our way here pretty well. It's slow and steady. And let me just tell you who we've picked up in the past week. Mike and Joyce Kimilatis in Mesa, Arizona have made their pledge. Suzanne Johnson in Fitchburg, Wisconsin. And Cookie Davy Duck in Castor, Alberta. Got to hear from Cookie. I only get to hear from Cookie every once in a while, and she's a wonderful lady, and she lost her husband, Gene, about a year ago, and she knows the gospel, and it has carried her through this time, and we just love you, Cookie. Al Vitale in Gainesville, Georgia. Walter Wilson called in from Selma, Alabama. Todd and Angela Gray, as always, from LaPorte City, Iowa. Michael Foster and Dexter Stocker. I really want to pronounce that last name in German, and it's a great German name. In Madison, Wisconsin, James and Carrie McCollum in Cullman, Alabama. I just got to speak to them for the first time today. Actually, I only got to speak to James, but it was a wonderful conversation. These folks are so down to earth and easy to talk to. Love you guys. Bob Hines, author of Redemption, A Declaration for All, Not a Choice for a Few. Our wonderful friend there in McDonough, Georgia. Lisa Freeman, dear girl, she's in Birmingham, Alabama. Carrie and Rita Waitman, what a lovely couple. They are in Whitehall, Montana. I forget whether I'm supposed to announce this name or not. I'm going to go with Anonymous in Salford, Ontario, in Canada. And then we have Donald Wynn in Wasilla, Alaska. That's where Sarah Palin's from. Oh, well, somebody sees the light. Anyway, Tom Tonsky in Canton, Ohio, and Richard and Pat Salonen, wonderful couple. We love you guys dearly in Lorium, Michigan. And that rounds out this week's folks who have continued the gospel. Oh, by the way, we've done seemingly well here on our monthly contributions. We are trying to recover $1,400 in lost contributions, in lost monthly pledges. Folks, and about 5 months ago, in this short period of time, we had a number of monthly givers who called us very apologetically, really hating to tell us their story, and we felt worse for them than they felt for us. But they really felt badly because they had to end their monthly pledge, at least temporarily, but they didn't know when they could ever come back because either they suffered a job loss or ran into a huge financial problem. Nobody has stopped contributing because they don't want to contribute to the gospel. It's quite the opposite, actually. But we need to recover that $1,400, and we currently in this pledge drive, we have $320 in new monthly pledges. So only 1,000 to go, Barris.
Only 1,000 plus. Mate, it's bread for us. Bread for us. Well, but that's good. It's up $120. Mike was just saying it was 200. It's up $120 in the couple of days since we recorded, Mike, and so that's wonderful.
Yeah, yeah. The $120 just came in between, you know. So, but we're letting you guys know where we're at, and I know there are people out there who are considering doing this, and please consider it. We don't ask anybody to do anything that stretches them. Please do not do something that will stretch you. But if you know you've got a 10 or a 20 that you can throw our way once a month or something like that, that all adds up. Given the number of people who actually listen versus the number of people who are actually given, we know that will add up quickly. And we encourage you to think about it. And if it's worth, pulling that 10 or 20 out every month for the gospel, please consider it. Give me a call. Go online to the donations page on our website at gospelrevolution.com, and please start that for us.
And don't forget, no amount's too small. Look, if you want to give us a dollar a month, go ahead and do it. Just do it all in one fell swoop. $12 is your annual contribution. Or if you want to give us $5 a month or $10 a month, you can make the contribution an annual once off and this time next year repeat it. But nothing is too small. Don't think for a moment that anything is too small. If you knew what $1 American would buy in Burma or would buy in Kenya where the gospel is going out on the radio stations, you wouldn't think it was too small. So don't hesitate.
We have a dear gospel revolutionary who gives $7.77 a month. And he's on a very fixed income, a very low income, and he just decided on that amount. And even then he didn't know that he could keep it up, but he has kept it up for a year and a half. Mm-hmm. And he's a wonderful guy. But you know what? We have other folks who have called me and said, here's my debit card. Do this every Monday. Just take this amount out every Monday. I had folks call today and say, let's do this bi-weekly. We're very flexible. And if you've got a way or that you would like to contribute, but it can't be monthly, or you'd like it to be weekly, or it's an odd amount, We can handle any way you want to give, and it's appreciated, and trust me, it goes towards getting the message out. It gets the message out around the world, and it, on the internet, through mailings here in the United States and Canada, through radio shows in Africa. It does a lot.
Thanks, Jeff. We really appreciate it. Goodness gracious. Keep those batteries charged up on your phone, buddy. these folks, along with everyone else that has contributed, we really do appreciate it. And those of you that have determined to help us with this deficit on our monthlies, thank you so very much. But the one-time gifts are always extremely helpful. And we're accomplishing a lot. So thank you guys so very much. And Jeff, thank you. And I hope you got your tower fixed out there to where that you're not having to experience so many dropped calls. So thank you guys. We love you a lot.
Gospel Revolution.
This week, Michael, we had a story from the Australian.com. It's the biggest selling newspaper in Australia. And it's a story about a person that we've all seen on TV after Joseph Prince. Maybe he's probably the most famous face outside of the USA, and that is Mr. Brian Houston of Hillsong. Now, everybody has sung a Hillsong song, and a few of us tried to write them. But Brian Houston, time for a bit of history here. Brian Houston started Hillsong as an Assemblies of God church in Baulkham Hills and in Sydney and Western Sydney, and then moved it to their own church. And he has fathered, if you like, a church with worldwide recognition. Well, in Australia, we're having at the moment a royal commission into the pedophilia of different, you know, priests and pastors and anyone else who was in church. And one of them, one of the big names in pedophilia in Australia is the Reverend Dr. Frank Houston, who happens to be Brian Houston's daddy. Now, Frank Houston started his ministry off in the Lower Hutt area of New Zealand, and then after that got too small for his pockets, he moved to Sydney, where in one of the promising areas of Sydney, he built a church. It wasn't a huge church, but he became quite a name. Unfortunately, today he's still quite a name, and that is as touching little boys. His curly-headed little boy is now Brian Houston, who probably is pastoring the biggest church in Australia. And this week he slammed his pedophile father, William Francis Frank Houston, as repulsive at the Child Sex Abuse Royal Commission. The only problem was in another journalistic expose, in the same week, he told the man whom his father sexually abused, he told this guy, the victim of his father, that he was actually guilty of seducing his dad. Brian Houston tells the sexual victim of his pedophile father that he had seduced his daddy, Frank Houston. What kind of hypocrisy is this?
Yeah, really. You know, I've had lunch with Brian Houston on several occasions while I was there in Australia, and a nice fellow he is for sure. And this is not surprising, not because it's Brian. I know nothing bad about Brian whatsoever, but this is typical self-righteous spirituality to accuse and excuse. They can do it all in one breath. It's really just quite amazing how that happens. And, you know, most of the times we look at this as someone accusing others and excusing themselves. But in this case, it's almost in the same breath that Brian has accused and excused his father.
Bring your tithe and bring your shame. Bring your guilt and bring your pain. Don't you know that's not your name? You will always be much more to me than Every day I wrestle with the voices that keep telling me I'm not right. But that's alright, 'cause I hear a voice and it calls me every day. When others say I'll never be enough, and greater is the one living inside of me than he who is living in the world. In the world.
Michael, this week we are dealing with the seven pillars of wisdom.
We are. When did all this start?
I don't know. A bit of a while back. That's right. You've been in East Tennessee. You've been sleeping. Rip Van Winkle. But this week we are facing pillar number five. Thank heavens we got past pillar number four. That pillar number four is the middle pillar, and it took the longest time to get through, the pillar of the doctrine of death and resurrection. What are these seven pillars again, mate?
Seven pillars are, number one, the doctrine of redemption. Number two, the doctrine of sin and forgiveness. Number three is the doctrine of Scripture. Pillar number four is the doctrine of death and resurrection. As you said, we've just completed two shows on that. Could have done five. the one we're now on the downhill stretch of this, and that is with pillar number five, which we are going into today, the doctrine of predestination, vitally important, and you're going to find out some wonderful things today. Pillar number six is the doctrine of freedom. And pillar number seven is the doctrine of fulfillment.
So the doctrine of predestination.
Mm-hmm.
Now, predestination simply means to be determined beforehand, and I stole that off of you. Tell us about this.
Well, you have different views about predestination. It's kind of like riding a horse, though. One group jumps over the horse and stands on this side. The other group stands behind the horse. Another group jumps on over the horse and stands on the other side, but nobody rides the horse. You know, it's like somebody's going to have to take this and accept what it says. As you know, with predestination, you have groups that say predestination just does not exist where redemption is concerned, that nobody is predestined. I've heard that explained in so many different ways, that we were predestined to have a choice. That's what predestination is, but that you will not find that anywhere, that predestination is that we were predestined to have a choice. That's kind of an oxymoron, actually.
Predestined to have a choice.
Yes. That's the way Baptists preach it. And then, of course, there are those who do accept that the Bible does have this doctrine in it of predestination. And they then say that you are either predestined to go to heaven or you're predestined to go to hell. That you came here in this life, you were born with a predestination. It was predetermined that you were either going to be born, and whenever you died, you were going to then suffer eternity in hell. So I would assume that would even override the doctrines about the age of accountability, because if you were born predestined,
you're going to go to hell anyway. I mean, plenty of babies in hell, apparently, according to those people.
Yes, and if you fail to reach the age of accountability, if the doctrine of predestination, as they see it, is true, it doesn't make any difference whether you die, at the age of one or any other age, that predestination is predestination. So there's so many things that people have to trip over. And let me tell you, this is one doctrine that everybody that teaches on it has to say, no matter what they believe, they have to say, and they almost have to say all of them at the same time, if and but or maybe. Because that's just the way, that's how inconsistent every stand that is in Christianity today, every stand that is out there requires if and but or maybe.
Well, let's have a look at that. Let's have a look at that for a moment.
Yes.
As far as I'm aware, now I may be wrong, and please, would you please call us up on 234-56-40971 and tell me if I'm wrong. And in the absence of anyone ringing up and telling us we're wrong, we're going to say, well, we must have been right. Now, as I understand it, there are four major branches of spiritual thought in this area of predestination. One, we have Calvinists. Calvinists are the people who believe you are predestined to be saved or not to be saved, to go to heaven or go to hell, to know God or to spend eternity, that is, to spend an eternity, that is, to spend an eternity, an eternity, an eternity. This is everlasting. It's never-ending torment and torture for 70 years of making a mistake on this planet. You were predetermined to be that, get that, do that. The ones who are predetermined to be in heaven, have a harp on a cloud, they were also predetermined. And Calvinism would also defend and teach the concept that 10% of the population of the world are going to make it and 90% are not going to make it, so that God has obviously predestined or predetermined that 90% of his creation are losers. The second group are Arminianists. Arminianists believe that you are predestined to have a choice. And this is ultimate idiocy. Because, see, if you weren't born again the first time, apparently you can get born again again. And the third group are what I call exclusionists, in as much as they don't teach either of the above. Now, this may be some of the Orthodox churches. Some people say, look, you're all in if you're in the church, and if you're not in our church, you're not all in.
Mm-hmm.
The fourth group is atheists, and they're the most sensible group, because they say, you're all idiots. You're all bonkers. Are you... Have you even thought this through? And who could blame them for being atheists when the only other options are?
Yes.
Such as will all proclaim that if you were born in India in 1400, you're going to go to hell. You didn't.
Mm-hmm.
A, you weren't predestined because obviously you didn't know, and if God had wanted to predestine you, he'd have sent a missionary there before then anyway, so you'd have known. So obviously you had to be predestined for hell. Arminian, how could you have a choice? You were predestined to have a choice. How could you possibly have a choice? You're going to go to hell. Exclusionists, you didn't belong to the Orthodox Church. Sorry, you're out. And so all of these groups, it seems to me, with the exception of atheists, teach some wonderfully self-serving doctrines of convenience. And I would have to say, if they were my only choices, I'd have to be an atheist. But is there a fifth choice, say redemptionist?
Redemptionist is it's not just a fifth choice. It's the first, second, third, fourth, and fifth choice. It is the only choice.
Why?
It is the only thing that makes sense, my God, to take out all these ifs, ands, buts, or maybes that would turn anybody into an atheist. You know, and even in atheism, you know, my observation of it is that most people are what I call emotional atheists. They don't believe because this happened, that happened, that didn't happen.
Well, this is a good time to talk about the difference between an atheist and an agnostic. Atheism... Mm-hmm. Is a Greek word, a, meaning without, theism. They say there is no God. Agnostic means a gnosis. A still means the same thing, without. It's a Greek root. And gnosis means knowledge. They're without knowledge. So they don't know if there's a God. An atheist says there is no God. An agnostic says there may be. There might not be. I don't know. I have no knowledge of whether there's a God.
Yes. So these are wonderful things to get squared away in our bucket full of opinions that people have about these things. At least we can have some correct definitions.
And most atheists who claim that they're atheists are actually agnostic.
Yes, that is true. We can't even label ourselves properly.
And you're talking about redemptionism. Tell me about this.
Well, redemptionism is that something was predetermined beforehand. You know, this is not serendipity. Now, serendipity is when you look back over something and, boy, that dot connect with this dot, and man, isn't that nice. Boy, it just looks as though it was meant to be. No, this isn't something that you look back and connect the dots. This is something that looked forward and foretold the future.
The scriptures, which you say are the law, the Psalms, and the prophets, in other words, most of the Old Testament, the scriptures are they which speak of Christ and redemption. But the term predestination is not even used in the Old Testament. So what do you...
Well, the term, as you look back to the Old Testament, actually, which is a lot clearer for our language, and it simply means to be determined. This was determined. And that is how the word predestination comes up in the New Testament. But it really is from this text in the Old Testament that something is determined. This is where we get our wonderful understanding of the 70 weeks of Daniel. The place where most people would understand the word determined, predestination, we'll call determined to be the Old Testament's predestination. All right. And so if we look at it that way, that really is how this all boils down. And this is, as we've gone over this many times over the last almost 20 years, but here we go again. Daniel chapter 9, verse 24. 70 weeks are determined. Now, this is predestined. This has already been determined. Now, it's not just the weather has been determined. It's not just that it's been determined that what the temperature is going to be. It's not just determined whether or not it's going to be a nice day, a bad day. He says that 70 weeks are determined up on thy people and the holy city. Now, the interesting thing that what he says is predetermined up on the people and upon the holy city, the very first thing of this that has been predetermined is to finish the transgression. Number one, what has been predetermined? What has been predestined? According to Daniel chapter 9, verse 24, upon people and upon the holy city. Now, we know that upon a lot of people would say, as Bears, when we were talking earlier that you pointed out, most people would say, well, they're talking about Israel and a special city. But we know, according to the scriptures, that this city and these people simply played out this stage role for the representation of the entire planet. As this role was played out by them, it was for the entire human race, because the entire human race was in the transgression of Adam. Now, he said the number one thing that was predetermined, folks, it was predetermined that the transgression would end. Now, the thing I have to do first off is take you to the New Testament and show you a very famous person who used this terminology. When Jesus was hung on the cross, the law was nailed to the cross, sin was nailed to the cross, what could Jesus have possibly meant? Well, he meant all of the things in Daniel 9 that were predestined or predetermined had been done.
Hang on, you're talking about transgressions being ended. Where did Jesus say that?
Jesus said it is finished. The Daniel told us what was going to be finished, and Paul explained what was finished. Paul said, where there is no law, there is no transgression.
You're quoting Romans 4:15, I think.
It's somewhere around there.
Because the law works wrath for where there is... The law works wrath.
The law works wrath.
I remember what you said about if you want to see wrath, just look for a legalist.
I remember saying that, and I got the wrath in that service, actually, also.
And Paul goes on to say, for where no law is, there is no transgression.
This is just so profoundly clear, and we've not had to say a single if and but or maybe about this predetermined act. This is what was finished. Now people want to know, what did Jesus mean when he cried out, "It is finished"? All we have to do is read Daniel chapter 9, verse 24, and we know everything that was finished when Jesus made that statement. And he says, "And to make an end of sins." This is the cutting off point, folks. This is where this ends. In fact, Barris, before we go any further, would you pull up the definition for the word determined as used here in Daniel 9:24, just to make sure we're not missing anything?
Let's see. The word determined, it's only used once in the Hebrew. In the whole Old Testament, this word is only used once. Hmm. We've got to go to our second string of detection here, and that would be the Septuagint. Now, the Septuagint was the Jewish scholars' concept of what the Old Testament meant, translated into Greek, and they use the word cutting off. Only word it's used in the whole Old Testament. Let's have a look at the New Testament.
How does that turn out there?
Let me read to you the only time it's used in the New Testament, and that is in Romans 9:27. Oh, my. Isaiah also cried out concerning Israel, "Though the number of the children of Israel be as the sand of the sea, a remnant shall be saved. For he," the remnant is a he, not a they. Oh, I love it. "For he," whoever the remnant is, "will finish the work." Oh, my gosh. Are you kidding me? "And shall cut it short." That is the same word in the Greek as is used back in the Septuagint in Daniel 9:24. The word determined. He'll shut
the
it.
Word determined.
Oh, it gets better. Mm. Oh, you're going to love this, Mike. We talked about this before the show, but I've just seen another thing. "He shall cut it short in righteousness," not in judgment, family, in righteousness, because...
Yes.
"Because a short work will the Lord make on the earth, and as Isaiah said before..."
I love this.
Answer me this, Mike. How many weeks is there in Daniel?
There's 70.
What is 7?
It's the number of completion or the number of rest.
Let's read on in Romans 9, verse 29. "And as Isaiah said before, in old days, except the Lord of the Sabbath..."
Seventh
day.
Mm-hmm.
"Had left us a seed, we'd have been as Sodom and been made like unto Gomorrah." In other words, here we have something which is talking about being cut off, a cutting off. We have something which is righteousness. We have something which is a very short work.
Mm-hmm.
And we have something about rest and seven.
Absolutely. It's all wrapped up there in a nice little package for anybody. And, except those days be cut short, there shall no flesh be saved.
Isn't that what one of the Gospels says Jesus said? Unless those days are cut short, even the very elect will be?
Yes. Also, remember, the roots of all this understanding is predestination. Except this has be determined, except this be predestined. If it weren't predestined, nobody would be saved.
If it weren't cut short, nobody would be saved.
So therefore, if it was not determined beforehand, nobody would be saved.
When was it determined?
Well, it was determined in the mind of God before the foundation of the world. According to, it says that somewhere in here.
And weren't we predestined to walk in good works?
Yes.
Who said that?
Paul, yeah.
So Paul said that we were predestined to walk in good works, and this was predestined before the foundation of the world.
Yes.
Wow.
The thing that we're trying to present to you here is, well, and I'm not trying to present it to you. Goodness gracious, it just says it here again, frontward, backward, any direction that you want to look, upside down, inside out, any fractal of this that you want to take. It all says the same thing. And notice we haven't said if and but or maybe, which with all teachings on predestination, in any of the groups of Christianity, no matter which position they take on predestination in Christian circles, they all have to attach if and but or maybe to their doctrines. You might as well just call it the First Church of If and But or Maybe. Just forget the doctrine and if you got a if, you got a and, you got a but, you got a maybe, then you got our doctrine. Because that's all it is if and but or maybe. When something is determined, there's no if and but or maybe. When something is predestined by God, there is nothing, no if and but or maybe. This was determined upon the people. Daniel 9:24. 70 weeks are determined upon thy people and upon the holy city. You can't drag this out. Now, one of the most offensive thing you can do to the 70 weeks of Daniel is to say it was not cut off after 70 weeks, because that's what it means. It means it was cut off. And the greatest insult you could do to this prophecy is to say it went on hold. Went on hold is contrary to the term determined.
Well, hang on. I didn't say it was put on hold.
No, you didn't, but everybody else in the Christian community says it's put on hold, because they will not tell you that transgression has been finished.
Now, this is the 70th week of Daniel.
Yes.
And if 7 is the number of rest and completion, then what's going to happen in the 70th week of Daniel?
Number 1, the finish of transgression. Number 2, make an end of sins. You see why they had to put this off into a futuristic prophecy that this hasn't been fulfilled?
I went out for lunch with my buddy Scotty on my birthday, and we happened down around this sort of, it was a really rich area in Nashville.
Oh, I thought you was going to say some seedy area of Nashville.
Got there too, but that was later. And mate, we just, I don't know how to say this for my sweet and dear Christian friends, but we sat outside a coffee shop in Franklin, Tennessee, or it was a Brentwood, Tennessee, and we just admired the handiwork of God.
You must have been sitting next to the river.
No, although there was a stream.
Some nice trees? Is that what you're talking about?
Inasmuch as the man in the gospel said, I see men as trees walking, yes, it could have been trees. No, this was that handiwork of God, that artwork of the divine that causes the male in us to rise up and say, hallelujah.
Are you trying to say this was predetermined? What is this?
Scotty said so. Scotty, who's not entirely on board with the gospel, but is just the most precious brother, he said, and I believe the Holy Spirit brought us here just so we can enjoy your birthday in this particular way. And who am I to disagree? Who am I?
And to make an end of sins. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, that was it. Okay.
I think you started talking about the creation and forgot the Creator. I think they speak of you in Romans.
I forgot about sins. I know that.
And to make an end of sins and to make reconciliation for iniquity. And folks, if this is in the future, the cross hasn't happened at all.
Didn't Isaiah say in chapter 53 of Isaiah something about iniquity?
Yes, he did. What was it, Bears?
Well, Isaiah said he was wounded for our transgressions and was bruised for our iniquities.
Mm-hmm.
So if iniquities aren't done away with, I guess he was bruised for nothing.
Exactly. I love the logic of the gospel. The logic of redemptionism is so powerful. It makes me glad to be a redemptionist.
Mm-mm-mm.
And to bring in everlasting righteousness. Yay! Now, we're told what gets cut off. And by virtue of what's cut off, we're now told what comes in and fills that in. And to bring in everlasting righteousness. Now, and this is where Christianity uses this and tries to defer all this based on one word, and to seal up the vision and the prophecy. Oh, okay, that's where God sealed it up, and we're waiting on that seal to be opened. Let me look here what this term means, to be sealed up. The term in Hebrew is chatham, and it means to make an end. It means to be brought to stop, and that's what it means to seal up. What Christianity has done with this term seal up means to be put on hold, when the word itself means just the opposite. What we're wanting to debunk here at this point is, let's take away the only part where that they even try to rationalize this. This is term sealed up, that this prophecy has not been fulfilled. And the fact of it is that the term sealed up means to put an end to all of this. It doesn't mean to withhold it in any way. At the end of this verse, not only it says to seal up the vision and the prophecy, this is the other thing that's going to happen with the 70th week of Daniel, is to anoint the most holy.
Has that been done yet?
If we go with Christianity, then the most holy has not been anointed. So Jesus is not Lord, based on Christian doctrine's definition of predestination, nor Christian doctrine's version of the 70th week of Daniel. Very last thing that Daniel says, the thing that is at this point of cutting off is to anoint the most holy.
It sounds a lot like Hebrews chapter 1, verse 9. That Paul talks about, and he says, you have loved righteousness and hated iniquity. Therefore, God, even your God, has anointed you with the oil of gladness above your fellows. Are you saying that if the 70th week of Daniel is completed, then that this phrase, the anointing, has been completed?
Ding, 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 ding. Paul got it right. Paul got it right. The most holy hath been anointed, as he explained in Hebrews chapter 1. And he explains that anointing throughout the entire book of Hebrews. So, you know, and Paris, we have some other things here too that are just so powerful, we cannot leave them out.
You know, it's not the people who agree with us, it's the people who question us that help us make progress. That's how we've done it since day one. What are your thoughts on what we've just been talking about? Why don't you call me on area code 234-564-0971 and let us know what you think about that. Else you can just email us at freedom@gospelrevolution.com. That was freedom@gospelrevolution.com. What do you think about that?
Now, we've been very clear about helping people see the term determined. We've gone back to the Old Testament. We still yet have the opportunity to go to the actual verses on predestination in Ephesians. But one of the things that I want us to see also before we close out this show, and we promise we'll cover all of that and a bag of chips. You're just not going to believe what all we've got for you for next week's program already. Barris and I both are wanting to make a 3-hour program right now, but we're going to have mercy on you. But one place, Barris, that I want, I would like for us all to look at and see is this, the description of things being predetermined, the description of predestination. And one of the best places that that's found is in John chapter 6. And, it's actually verse 44, but pick that up anywhere that we can there, Barris, so that we can read this in context.
Okay, let's go to John 6:41. The Jews then murmured at him.
Murmur, 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 murmur.
Because he said, I am the bread which came down from heaven. And they said, but ain't that Jesus, the son of Joseph? We knew his mum and his dad. How come he's now saying I came down from heaven? Jesus therefore answered and said to them, don't murmur. Murmur not amongst yourselves. No man can come to me except the Father which has sent me draw him. Mm-hmm. And I will raise him up at the last day.
My goodness.
What on earth does that mean?
Well, this is very profound. Of course, the last day, we know when the last day was, right?
It was yesterday. It was my birthday. As far as I'm concerned, the whole world can stop.
The last day was, of course, the cross, which is the death, burial, and resurrection of Christ. And he said, no man can come to me except the Father which hath sent me draw him. So look how he's doing this. He's saying he has placed an equal equivalency upon those who are drawn to him that was sent. That's powerful. To the same degree, the one responsible for him, the one being sent, is also responsible for those that are drawn. So you have as much authority over being drawn as Jesus had of being sent. This was a predetermination of God, that there was going to be this point where he who was sent was going to meet those that were drawn. And then when he put those two together, when the one that was sent comes together with those that are drawn, what was he going to do? I will raise him up in the last day. How is he going to do that? Because he that sent and he that was drawn become one on the cross. He that was sent and he that was drawn becomes one at the cross. And then when he died, then he raised all of them up. This is a story of a predetermined place, a predetermined appointment, a predetermined time, a predetermined event, predetermined as to who was going to be involved. Those that are involved are as predetermined as Jesus being Lord is predetermined. You can't separate these two, because he says the same Father who sent him, the same one has drawn whom he will to him. There is a spiritual equivalency here, Barris, that cannot be denied. The spiritual equivalency here is those that are drawn are just as drawn as Jesus is sent. And you can't take away this spiritual equivalency here that Jesus is trying to lay down for us here. The clarity with which Jesus taught this, it's amazing how Christianity picks and chooses out of this. Bottom line out of, you know, come on, he that believeth, come on, do it, follow. If you eat, you won't ever get hungry again. But here's the bottom line every time. No man can come to me except the Father which hath sent me draw him. Now, he states this, I think, two times during this entire come on and believe, and they're appealing, do something so we can believe. And what he's doing is making believing absolutely irrelevant. Now, this is the very same verses where Christianity chooses to leave out predestination and make believing relevant. And what Jesus is doing is making believing irrelevant by engaging them in this run down this rabbit hole. Okay, so you're saying you would believe? Really? You'd believe if I say just the right thing? You'd believe if I do just the right thing? Yeah, doesn't make any difference, because if the Father doesn't draw you, it doesn't make any difference anyway.
Now, if you want to find those videos, you'll find them on our Facebook page, which is Friends of Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution. Or alternatively, I mean, we always publish them there. Or alternatively, you can go to youtube.com and type in Gospel Revolution 1. That is Gospel Revolution and the number 1. And that will take you directly to our channel, where there is every single video that we've created up there.
And you can see all of the archives of Jeff's videos that he's been doing now for several months. These are all just short little vignettes, highly focused, chock-a-block full of high vitamins and highly nutrients. So get yours today. They're a lot of fun. More than a lot of fun, they are really thought-provoking and incredibly well-researched. So get yours today.
Gospel Revolution.
Bears, it's come to that time in this show, as we have committed to our folks that are listening, to take each and every one of these pillars and hold them up to Paul's, not my gold standard, not Bears's gold standard, but Paul's gold standard of teaching as to whether or not it meets the what's our other word we use? Gold standard and criteria.
Meets the criteria of the gold standard of wisdom.
Yes, whether it meets this criteria of the gold standard of wisdom. Now, what we're comparing it to is the wisdom of God as compared to the wisdom of the world. First, again, let us reestablish that the wisdom of God is not the wisdom of the world. Now, what is the wisdom of the world? The wisdom of the world is cause and effect religion. Now, the wisdom of God steps outside of that realm, and God does something all by himself. That is the wisdom of God. So let's run through this, Bears, real quickly before we go and see if we have found the gold standard of wisdom here in this teaching on predestination.
The first criteria of the gold standard of wisdom is that wisdom is the testimony of God that sees us through the cross.
Predetermined, I would say just the word itself says that that is God's testimony. If it's predetermined upon thy people. Do you get that, folks? It didn't say predetermined with thy people. It's predetermined upon the people. So I think that's God's testimony.
Second criteria of the gold standard of wisdom. Wisdom is a revelation of righteousness, not a requirement for righteousness.
Goodness, we've read through everlasting righteousness would be ushered in at this predetermined point. And if it's predetermined, it has nothing to do with man. Sounds like this righteousness, the gold standard of the wisdom of God, has been met.
Third criteria of the gold standard of wisdom is that wisdom is the knowledge of what God has freely given us.
We have to be redundant, folks, because that's all it is. It's the same thing. It's the same fractal, and that's what we're wanting to do is show you this incredible fractal nature of this gospel. Yes, once again, Barris, it meets even this criteria for the gold standard of the wisdom of God.
And the fourth criteria of the gold standard of the wisdom of God is that wisdom is that which gives us the ability to judge all teachings, whether they are spiritual or natural.
Well, we've done it. We have given you every doctrine of the Christian world on predestination. They all fit within these boxes. And then we let the scriptures speak for themselves. And what we came up with is the wisdom of God, and that we now know those teachings are not the wisdom of God based on the other three criteria, that those teachings are not the wisdom of God. The conclusion, this doctrine of predestination is truly a teaching that the Holy Spirit has helped us to understand. If we had something to do with this teaching or a role to perform in this teaching, it would be the wisdom of man. But we have no role to play. This was determined upon man, not with man.
Okay, how does this compare with what mainline Christianity teaches, Michael?
Well, mainline Christianity teaches the wisdom of man, not the wisdom of God. Because even when they do deal with the word predestination, as you pointed out, Barris, earlier, most of them just won't even deal with the predestination thing at all. But they have criteria for how man's involvement leads to this incredible gift. and it can't be. It just, their doctrines cannot be true based on any criteria that we see that is laid out by Paul.
When you're feeling down or you got the case of the blues, why don't you listen to the Gospel Revolution?
And so it is that we must leave you, folks. We love you one and all, and we especially thank all of you who, with your financial support, keep this message of grace and peace going out every week. If you'd like to join them in increasing our coverage of the gospel, call our office at area code 321-220-4373 and speak to Jeffrey. If you'd like to leave a message for the show, oh, by the way, Bowler, your messages are coming out next week. I'm so sorry that I've just been, what can I say? And if you would like to leave a message for the show, simply telephone me on area code 234-564-0971 and leave your voicemail. Now, by the way, Mike, I've got a really great testimonial by Bowler. It is just fantastic. And also, he has left a question or two for us. But the testimony, you're going to love it. You're going to love it. That's next week.
Good.
Our web address is www.gospelrevolution.com, and we're always up for a Facebook chat at Friends of Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution. Thanks to Marcel Roos in the Netherlands, All the Gospel All the Time is being broadcast 24/7 at myradiostream.com/Gospel Revolution. And so it's good night from myself, Beres Bartlett, from the, well, what can I say? They're just outstandingly clean, neat and tidy. Gospel Revolution Studios right here in Nashville, Tennessee.
And it's good evening from Michael Williams right here in full-fledged fall weather in Houston, Texas. And we love you guys. It was wonderful to visit my family, but you know, there's just no place like home. And we're always glad to be with you from home. And in your home, thank you for joining us. And thank you so much, all of you that are have and are and will contribute to this pledge drive. You make everything work smoothly. Thank you so much, very much. We love you.
You know, I got a buddy up in Alaska, mate.
Mm-hmm.
He says there's no place like Nome. Yeah, well, it's a very old joke. It might have been Laurel and Hardy or Jerry and Dean. I don't know who it was. I still like it.
I think you just pulled that out of your hat. I don't think you can. I don't think you can attribute that to anybody.
Okay. And so it's good night from myself, Beres Bartlett from the. So we've done that part.
You already did that.
So remember, I'm just trying to get you to hang on as long as possible. I know when you've run out of oomph, and I'm just seeing how long you can laugh. So remember to join us again next week, same time, same channel, where we're going to do the same thing all over again.
We already know it's going to be better.
Always is.
Now, if you're tired of the devil stealing, if you're tired of the devil killing, if you're tired of the devil destroying your life, you must order the personal package, and you got to order it right now! Order the Moko Shad. I mean, you're going to hell right now, and you're needing answer my prayers.
Is it always like this around here, Mildred?
Always. Oh, and it's so embarrassing.
No, I love it. It reminds me of home.
If you save yourself from marriage, you're a bore. If you don't save yourself from marriage, you're a horrible person. If you won't have a drink, then you're a prude. But they'll call you a drunk as soon as you down the first one. If you can't lose the weight, then you're just fat. But if you lose too much, then you're on crack. Damned if you do, and you're damned if you don't. So you might as well just do whatever you want. So bass lots of noise, kiss lots of boys. just disappoint them. Just cause you can't beat them don't mean you should join them. So make lots of noise, kiss lots of boys, kiss lots of girls. If that's something you're into, when the straight and narrow gets a little too straight, roll up the joint or don't. Just follow. Just get so many trips round the sun.